Listen, I just think it's more fun when we don't start with like, oh, hello, we're going to talk about this today. So,
go.
So this is our second time recording. We had technical difficulty. We're starting over. And the first time I surprised Beth with a question. Thanks, Mouth.
Not Beth.
Never Beth. Unless I'm talking too quickly and I am slurring. So instead of note cards, what I have is threads. Okay. So on threads, I put a question out here for people who remember what it's like to be new, right? Because we haven't been new to knitting sweaters in a very long time. And we spend our whole lives knitting sweaters. So it's very hard for us, I think, to entirely go back to that beginner's mindset. And so here is something that comes to us from Jessica. And Jessica says, I'm making a cardigan and using a cotton fiber that hangs heavy, but also shrinks with washing. And I had no clue which size to make for my husband since he was in between sizes. I reached out to the designer asking for advice only to be met with one sentence. Google it. Like I hadn't heard that already.
That's not very nice.
Yeah, it's not very nice. And then she says, the same designer was upset with me because I did decreases every 10 instead of every 14 since it met my husband's arm size and length better than the pattern. So here we have an example of a knitter who is on the right track, who is weighing her fiber properties against the schematic and using the schematic to make an informed decision about how to make this pattern fit the human body that she's intending the clothes for. And we have somebody who's supposed to be in a position of expertise and authority, like denigrating her for that.
I know.
I'm so mad on her behalf.
Well, right. So if a designer isn't nice to you, then you don't buy their patterns.
Don't give them money.
I keep looking at myself, everyone, because I think I'm blurry, but it's going to fix itself eventually, or I'm just a little blurry today. Anyway, right. So it's very disheartening to hear that. And obviously, it's more than just like, we can say if we don't like the way that a small business owner is running their business, then we're not going to support them in the future. But with a knitting project and with a knitting pattern, you're not just supporting someone for a moment, like walking into a store and walking out, right? Like you're there, you've invested in their idea and you're trying to create something with it. And that can take months, or even I've worked on sweaters for years that are like in and out of my whip bin because I'm busy or whatever, right? So you're putting a lot in. So I do think knitwear designers have a level of obligation, like to be responsive and kind about that kind of thing. So very lame, whoever that is. Now back to more of the issue. Like, yeah, I mean, what would you say if someone's working with a cotton yarn and they're worried about it shrinking? I mean, I know what I would say.
Is that rely on your swatch?
Yeah, it's make sure that you wash and dry your swatch the same way that you plan to wash and dry your final pattern, and that you should be accounting for that in your gauge swatch, hopefully. And I know it's intimidating with cotton because I do put my cotton knits through the washer and the dryer. If it's like Alice isn't doing that because she's a sample and she's going to live separately from everything else, right? But my own knits that are not samples, that's how I treat them. And I have had no issue with that. Zero, none. And I will say this, cotton knits often do come out of the dryer a little bit smaller than size, but then within a wear or two, they stretch back to size usually. So my swatches, I don't think my swatches have ever lied to me going through the dryer with cotton. It just is likely the way that you're going to treat the final fiber. It also fluffs the fiber up a little bit, so it's nice, but I don't wash my cotton knits as frequently as I wash like a t-shirt, a non-knit t-shirt, right? Because knit fabric in general is more open, has more airflow. So even if you're not working with like antimicrobial wool, cotton and silk and other plant fibers have a certain level of antimicrobial property, and with all the airflow, they're just not going to get stinky and dirty as regularly as like a regular shirt that you're working out in or something, right? Yeah. So that's how I deal with cotton personally. And I do love working with that fiber. Do you have any other comments for Jessica?
Yeah. So I think that a pattern should give you guidance on how to choose a size. If that guidance is not helpful or you're between sizes, look at the schematic. Always look at the schematic and see what the schematic measurements are and compare it to your body measurements. And also compare it to other things in your wardrobe that you love. We especially see some beginner-friendly patterns out there that will recommend a huge range of ease, right? Mm-hmm. It's not helpful when it says choose something with 0 to 10 inches of positive ease, right? What does that even mean? What is the model wearing? What did you actually recommend? So
what did you grade for?
What
did you grade for? Because you can't grade for 0 to 10. You have to choose one number of ease that you're adding. Yeah.
But the other thing I want to say is the pattern that the designer writes is not like a product of just the designers, right? Mm-hmm. Lots of things come together to create that. The person who dyed the yarn, the person who chose those colorways, the person who raised those sheep, the person who milled that yarn, the tech editor who weighed in, right?
And then the final testers.
And the final, and all the testers. And the final person who is a contributor to the finished product is the knitter, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the person who spends the most time working on that finished object. They are the artist. They get to do whatever they want with the pattern. It's not an insult to the designer. The best case scenario, a well-written pattern is a framework for a knitter to take it and run with it. Mm-hmm. So anybody who's got a bad attitude about what you've quote unquote done with their pattern can sit down.
Yeah. And listen, like, even when I see that someone, because lots of people will be like, I did this and this and this. I hope that's okay. Tee hee hee. Listen, I don't care. Even if what I think you did doesn't look good, even if I'm like, that's crazy that you did that, I still don't feel any type of way. It's not personal to me. If you like it, then you can. Sometimes people will be like, oh, I did this thing and it completely ruins the fit of this. And I'm like, oh, all right, you did that, you know? But sometimes I think the cases I'm talking about, sometimes people are very experimental with the mods that they make. And that is okay, because that's how we get to learning things. Even when I was new to sweater making myself, I did a lot of things where I'd be like, I think I wanted to make this narrower, and I wouldn't know why, but I just like wanted to experiment, I think. And then sometimes it would be like, oh, I really messed this up. That was supposed to be wide for a reason, you know, and I learned from that, and it's all good. But yeah, what we put out there is a recipe. And like, if someone wants to bake a cake and they want to change vanilla to orange or something like that, like, that's fine. You can do that.
Still honored that you chose to work with one of our patterns. Still would love to be tagged in your finished product. Still want to encourage you and cheer you on. Take it, turn it upside down, take the sleeves off, steek it, crop it, whatever you do. It's your project.
If someone does something really different with one of my patterns and it turns out really well, like they have mastery of technique and they made these really cool mods, like, I'm psyched on that. So I definitely want to see it either way. And either way, you know, like you said, Jen, I'm glad you liked my design enough to want to work with that as the base of your project.
So thank you, Jessica, for sharing those thoughts. And the reason that we put this out there is because today we want to be going back and kind of, you know, we've been hearing some things in emails. We saw some things on the response to our formula pattern thing. We really want to talk about, if you're newer, right?
Yeah.
What our tips would be for you to get the most out of your first few sweater projects. And I think the first thing that I would say comes right back to what Jessica was talking about, or would be something I would tell Jessica, which is just have fun with it, right? Mm-hmm. Keep your expectations. Like, if this is your first time taking a pattern written for wool and doing it in a different fiber blend, you know, have fun with it. Let it be, let it go, right? Yeah. Enjoy it, knit it and enjoy it, and expect it to feel like an experiment.
Yes. And if it doesn't work, then it's okay, right? Note what happened. Try and note what happened. And then just move on. You can always reclaim yarn if you want to. And even I have found, like all of the sweaters I knit when I was a new sweater knitter that I was unhappy with, there was always like some friend that would come over that thought it was really cool. And I would just give those things away and make someone else really, really happy. And that was enough for me when I was like new and figuring it out. Like there was always a person that appreciated what I had made enough that I was like, okay, well, great. Let me let this go and do it again and try again. Right. So there is a huge level of just like, it does take a long time to become a really good sweater garment knitter. And that's why Jen and I are often talking to you people who are a little more intermediate or advanced, because we're talking about fit, and fit is its own section of this hobby, right? Its own hobby in a lot of ways, just like fashion is a hobby or an interest that's outside of knitting, right? Yeah. And fit is, in my opinion, fit is what turns knitting into fashion. So for people who have all three of these interests, you know, recognize that if you're making a garment, you are flexing all three of those skills at once, like your own fashion and aesthetic sense, your skill as a knitter, maker, great crocheter, and your understanding of fit. It's like three little circles overlapping in this one project.
Yeah. So we're going to get into it. Let's roll the bump bump. And then I also want to talk to you about your plans for fall, right? It's Happy New Year's. It's the end of July. So
that was me blowing like a noisemaker.
I love it. Please make that everyone. Sound more.
We'll be right back. How I don't make enough weird sounds on our podcast. In more real life, sounds. I make a lot of weird sounds, but we'll see. We'll see, everyone. Anyway, it's time for bum, bum, bum.
All right. We're back. We have the giggles today.
I know. Well, it's because this is our second try. We're recording and we like got all scared. We are professional podcasters, y'all. We're like recognizing all of the problems and being like, pause, halt.
Is this okay? Is it all right? Is it fine?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I told you I went back and like watched our first episode and we've come
was
a long
it awful?
Way. No, it wasn't awful. As my high school art teacher would say, it was coming along. It was coming along.
That's a nice high school art teacher thing to say.
Hey, a lot of people are still with us, so there must have been some kernel there. But it makes me excited to see what we do over the next year. But that's also true, yeah. I think, of us as designers, right? Like, you know, sometimes people are like, oh, I'm knitting something from one of your first couple of designs. And I'm like, good.
Oh, I freak out. Yeah. I mean, I discontinued the first three patterns that I released already because I was like, no, no more people shall knit this. They were fine. The sizes that existed were okay. The size range wasn't good enough. And honestly, the sizes that existed were not graded at the standard that and designed at the standard that I design at now. Yeah. So my early patterns that exist, I would say are still like comparatively good, but compared to what I'm doing
now. I would
still
cast them on and knit them. It's just, we're always more excited about our more recent back catalog than our deep back catalog, right?
Yeah. I think, right, to speak to this idea that fit is a hobby of its own, that like the pursuit of that has made both Jen and I a lot more advanced in the hobby of fit. So we've certainly both learned a lot through the process of designing, and we still are. Every year, I think I look back and realize that there are just a few little things that I know now that I didn't know then, or that I'm practicing now that I wasn't practicing then, that make overall a big impact. So
yeah.
But, you know, speaking of first sweater patterns. I actually think some of my earlier designs could be better first sweater patterns because they're a little less complex than the things that I'm doing now, right? So there's always going to be a good use and a good purpose for any type of garment, simple or complicated.
It's true. Mm-hmm. We've also, I think, come a long way in how we show up for the people that we serve. So you and I are both very interested in the actual knitters who knit our things and in making sure mm-hmm. that they have the tools that they need, but also that we're creating like a sense of delight and excitement and making things of substance and importance, right? So
yeah,
I think we're both kind of moving away from, in general, launching single patterns, right? It's yes. It's too much pitching. It's too much selling. Like, I'd rather mm-hmm. create one or two collections per year that are really meaningful, that tell a story together, that offer mm-hmm. people some options. Yeah. So what are you doing for fall?
Well, so lots of people have seen my first fall design already, which is the Mary Raglan. And I have not shown anyone the accompanying piece, which is my Tory Tink. I was talking about it a little bit.
Well, you've shown me.
Well, yes, you have seen it. And Sarah out there editing it. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hey, Sarah. I'm rewriting the whole neckline.
What could go wrong?
It's fine. Yeah, so the Tory Tink is going to be a layering piece, and they're both lace, but they're very different types of lace, and they're designed to be able to be worn together because that is my favorite way of wearing knits, is like piled on top of each other. So plant fiber, or Tory is knit with mulberry silk, so that's not a plant fiber, but we often pretend silk is a plant fiber.
We do.
She's a warm weather fiber.
Listen, it has mulberry right in it.
Yeah. Except that it's made out of like dead bodies and not made out of a plant. But
don't add us. We do know that silk is not a plant material, you guys. We do know.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm okay with it, honestly. I'm okay with wearing silkworms. And they are fibers. So the Tory Tink is meant to just peek out of the bottom of this raglan, and so that you're able to just like going into a cool space, you put on your sweater, you get warm, you take it off, you're still wearing a great hand knit that stands alone. But yeah, the Mary Raglan, I think I told people, was based on one of my first raglan patterns, the Love Yourself sweater, which is discontinued, has been redesigned, got her glow up, and now is ready for everyone, or is getting ready for everyone. And I wore that sweater constantly with a hand knit tank underneath it. So I'm recreating that experience, and I'm going to be launching these patterns together. So folks who support the collection, who want to purchase both patterns, are also going to get a bonus, like ebook, tiny ebook, zine, ebook, booklet type of, whatever you want to call this special download that's going to include longer format versions of the stories that I like to tell for the patterns. It's going to include some fall ritual, a fall tarot reading and like spread for folks, and a bonus little PDF of, or a bonus pattern for a tarot pouch. So I'm starting to put all those pieces together, and it feels really special. Last fall, I did a tarot series where I just shared some of my background with part of my yoga life has been being a tarot reader as well. So that's something my grandmother passed down to me, and it's something I love sharing with folks. And I know a lot of the folks who knit my patterns are also interested in these like witchy vibes. So coming this October, you have your own little witch booklet from yours truly.
I love
that. Thank you. I love your fall collection, and I'm going to let you talk about it now.
I am going so hard for fall. I only have two designs coming out for the rest. Maybe technically three, because, well, I'll tell you about it in a second. I only have two sweater designs for the rest of the year, right? And they're very important to me. They're very special. They're both raglans. And they both feature different types of color work or not, right? So Pluses is an all-over stranded color work sweater, knit in the round from the bottom up. And the study group, which is here behind me if you're watching, is an intarsia design, but it's like easy intarsia, right? You're not, it's just straight, it's straight lines. So it's easy intarsia. And that one is seamed, right? And so both of these sweaters will explore different ways of bringing color to your knits, or you can knit them plain if you prefer. But I really want this collection. So my spring collection was called Out Loud, and it was about showing up with color and being bold and defiant. This fall's collection is going to be called Body of Work, and I'm going to be exploring what it means to be a stitcher, like a maker, a knitter, or a crocheter, and all the things that we create individually and collectively as a body of work, but also what it means to have a body that is something that we are constantly inhabiting and working on embodying and healing and recovering with, right? And the way that those two things intersect. So there'll be a publication. I have at least three people who will be contributing written pieces. I have one other designer coming on board who I will highlight her work. It's not like she wrote this specifically for the publication, but it'll be featured. So it'll be studio photography. It's going to have a little trial pattern in it too. So it'll have a little zip case for a tablet or a composition notebook that will give you a chance to debut this simple intarsia pattern. And that'll be out well before the sweaters will. But yeah, so there will be a publication, and the publication will be paid, right? It'll be like a magazine. But then inside I'll have a code so that you can apply the price of the booklet to your pattern purchase.
Nice.
And it'll include the case study pattern, the little, I'm calling it case study. Isn't that cute? So we'll have study group and case study, because it's a little tablet case. It's so twee.
I want to make one for my Surface.
Yes. It's so cute too. I have both sides knit and blocked, so I get to work on it this week.
Yay. Well, I'm excited about that. I'm excited to see what you do. And you're printing your publication, right? Or have you decided?
I haven't decided.
I want to print mine too. So we're going to be doing, Jen and I love to do research together on all kinds of things. So
yeah,
we're going to be doing research and figuring out what makes sense at this point. But yeah, how do y'all feel about handheld printed materials? Like, are you a knitting magazine collector? Do you love that? I want to know, because the early days of my knitting, I used to always like purchase knitting publications and magazines, and I loved collecting them and reading through them. But then, you know, with regular subscriptions, like I had like a million copies of Interweave Knits at some point, and they build up. So I really like this idea of like something that's in between a regular magazine and a book, you know, publishing like little physical treasures for people. And also, like, I want to know if people are still into that tactile sensation of having a little booklet or a little book, a publication of some kind.
I haven't been real secretive about my thoughts on the knitting publications that are out there. I have a whole blog post about it, right? I don't feel like the medium is a great one for sweater patterns, right? So personally, I love collecting the like quarterly or biannual publications that feel good. Like, I'm not, I don't need any more glossy mags. I don't need any more, you know, newsstand type magazines in my life. But I love the beautiful ones, but I've never knit one from one except for once I knit a hat pattern, because I don't feel like the medium lends itself well to the type of shaping I want, right? There's a reason I read a 26-page pattern for y'all. And there's a reason that I don't submit to third-party publications anymore, because they're not going to give me 26 pages to give you what you need to get that fit, right? So I feel like as knitters are asking more from their patterns, The print method of conveying that information has declined, but I still love those publications for inspiration. And I've been saying for a few years, like, I feel like if they just were like, this is just going to be an inspiring, beautiful piece, and they gave up on the grading, it would transform the experience for me. And so I think that's kind of what I'm trying to do, slot myself right in there. And so if I do print it, it'll have to be fancy, which means it won't be cheap. So
same.
I don't know.
Agree. I'm definitely not doing any inkjet.
It won't be glossy. It'll be on matte paper if I print it. But yeah, I'm splashing out for a nice photographer. I've hired a model I'm really excited to work with. Mm-hmm. She's active in the knitting community. And
She's super cool.
Yeah. And I'm excited to get the contributions from a few other knitters and designers on things that they want to share. It's just, mm-hmm. I'd rather make something of substance that's exciting than just keep humping copy.
Hey, some of us like humping copy.
Some of us are better at it than others.
I've been a writer for a long time, so the writing part doesn't really bother me, but it does just make so much more sense to me to offer work a few times a year instead of constantly like having to go through those systems. And also, as both Jen and I offer y'all other types of things, that sometimes do deserve to stand alone. Like, I don't know that I would release the bralette as part of a collection. I would probably release
I put it in my like collection.
It did have a shout out in your collection. I appreciate it. But, you know, when I have something that's really, really different or unique, then there's some value in talking about that on its own. And then also, it's fun for us to like show you this and that. Here's what I'm doing, and have it be like a little art show. Sorry for smacking my microphone.
Well, I think this is part of a larger conversation about how designers get paid, right? Mm-hmm. So people who come into our Instagram space or subscribe to our newsletters, read our blogs, or watch this broadcast or listen to it don't have to pay for that. It's paywall free. And we mm-hmm. consider it paywall-free educational material, right? And as we mm-hmm. do more of that, and we align with knitters who are interested in seeing more of that out in the world, and they support us on Ko-fi, we're able to be more focused on giving our audiences what we think is in their best interest, mm-hmm. connecting them with things that maybe we didn't make. But because we're kind of serving as a fiduciary for folks who are reading and listening and watching, we're kind of able to get off that hamster wheel a little bit and focus more on just serving folks who engage with our other content. So, you know,
that's true.
Things that look free aren't free.
And I consider this like, you know, the thing is, the reality is, and why we're doing this episode today, that newer garment makers don't, even in 26 pages, don't necessarily have the resources that they need to navigate those patterns. So whether you're working with our pattern or someone else's, all of this other material that we create is there to help people succeed, right? To help you actually have what you need to make a really nice sweater or a really nice whatever, fill in the blank. So that you can pursue the hobby of fit and the hobby of design or the hobby of fashion alongside your hobby of knitting or crocheting or sewing if you're a sewist. But I don't know that we would have any strictly sewists in our audience.
So in that spirit, you and I both have written patterns that we think are suitable for first-time sweater knitters, assuming that they have other skills in their toolkit already, like being able to maintain gauge or having worked projects that include all the shaping, sometimes mm-hmm. maybe even seaming, right? So if you're an experienced knitter and you've done all this other stuff, you've just never knit yourself a sweater, you know, we totally have patterns that we think are appropriate. But if you are somebody mm-hmm. who maybe you've knit a hat, or two, maybe you've knit one pair of socks and you're ready to do your first garment. You know, maybe you want to get that first garment under your belt from someone else before you come over to our content.
Yeah. Or one of our earlier patterns that are a little bit less complicated, that have less shaping and are still going to fit. I don't think Jen nor myself have any patterns out there that we don't think will give you a good finished result, but they're not going to be as high level fit as the things that we're releasing now. So like I'm thinking of my May crop sweater, which is like a really cute summer cotton crop knit in worsted weight. So it's also relatively fast. It's a seamless set and sleeve. So it's pretty straightforward pattern. And it doesn't include a lot of complex instructions because it's one of the first patterns that I released, right? So other patterns like that, or I'm thinking of your sweater soft structure is probably one that I would tell someone would be a good first garment. But yeah, I don't know that pattern as well as I know my own, obviously. Do you think that's a good one?
Yeah, it does. It has a cable feature in it. So if somebody is capable of and interested in a very simple one cross cable, it's totally suitable. But also classic LBD is designed to take people from being a competent knitter to a sweater knitter.
But I would think it's ambitious for anyone to do their first garment in a fingering weight.
I think for me that when somebody tells me they want to knit a sweater and they're like, how do I make sure that I get a great fit? The first thing is being able to maintain gauge.
Right.
Right. And in fingering weight, that if you're not there yet, that can be magnified.
Yes. As well as just the, I think, overwhelm of that. Something I wrote down for this episode is that knitting a garment and knitting your first few garments is actually asking yourself to like decondition a lot of the like Western culture and like late stage capitalist feelings of instant gratification and perfectionism and like the need to be productive. So my thoughts are that like, I know I've learned patience from knitting garments. Like I wasn't a very patient young person who is, I extra wasn't, but I do think I'm really patient now. And that's partially because I'm used to like settling into something that's going to be a long-term gratification. But if you are not used to that, and if you feel like you get bored of things quickly, which is something I think a lot of newer garment makers say to me, I think the tendency to not finish things is higher when you're new, probably also because you're maybe not as good at selecting things you'll like. But those are some assumptions. I don't know. I think that it was very true of me.
I think it's harder to stay motivated with something that takes a long time if you're not confident about the outcome.
Exactly. Yeah. So like that self-doubt and having to work for a very long time, I think it could freak people out.
Yeah. I have another comment from somebody on Threads who shared a question with us. So this one's from Kate. Kate says, I'm always nervous about a bottom-up sweater since I can't try on as I go. I feel like it's hard to judge length when there are so many variables about how long a torso is and how cropped the design is intended to be, especially without knowing how the armhole will fit. Are you laughing at me?
No, I'm laughing at myself. Okay. So first of all, Kate, I want to apologize because I very visibly rolled my eyes during.
Oh my gosh.
I am sorry. I am not rolling my eyes at you, Kate, but this is something I hear a lot. I prefer bottom up. I am a bottom up gal. You know, me and Ludacris.
What?
You know what I'm referencing.
I do know.
And I just think it's a more straightforward way of making a garment, and that for a lot of reasons I can go into. However, the reason that I roll my eyes is because it's just false to think that you're trying on a top-down garment and actually seeing the length. I have two top-down patterns, the Therese dress and the Alice T. And I'm knitting the Alice T into a dress right now. Shout out to my birthday dress. My birthday is in 3 days, everyone, and my birthday dress is not even a t-shirt. So I knew I wasn't going to be able to knit it that fast. But here she is. She's coming along. And the thing is that while this doesn't look like very much, this is actually almost to my hip after blocking. And I know that because I've knit this whole project before and done it and blocked it. And the amount, especially of length, that changes after blocking is a lot. So you can try things on when you're knitting top down, and you can check, and I'll usually like pull them a little bit to stretch the length a little bit, but know that it's not accurate. That's not accurate unless you're taking it off your needles, putting it on yarn, blocking it, waiting for it to dry, and then trying it on, and then you can see it accurately, which you can do. But I don't think most people are doing that when they try on top down. And you're going to trick yourself and end up with something that's too long.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I think that what Kate has said here is a place where we can add a tip, right? So, you know, Kate's like, I don't know how it will fit because I don't know how the armhole will fit. Instead of looking at the armhole from underarm, which Kate, you're right, that's super subjective. You want to be looking at the total length of the garment. And the total length of the garment is always going to start right up here. So then you can drop that measuring tape straight down and compare the total length of the garment. Or if it's not giving you a total length, add up all the individual measurements to get that total length so that you can predict where that's going to land on you, because you're going to get gauge. Or if you don't get gauge, you're going to know how your gauge difference will affect your sweater. And that's how you can tell where it will land.
Yeah, that's what I do, measuring tape. And then you can also see from that where that arm size is going to land. Which, you know, arm size measurements, arm size measurements are very hard to measure on yourself. So we've said that before, but this is where the kind of the complimentary tip of looking at things that you have that fit you well and measuring the arm size on those garments will tell you what arm size depth you're going to prefer. So yes. I know like that I like for my own body about 7 or 7.5 inch arm size depth for most garments. And I'm looking for that in the schematic. If it's a, you know, if it's something very different than the silhouettes that I generally make, then maybe I would want more. I would very rarely be happy with less than that because I know that less than that usually rides up on me in a way I don't like. And just having that knowledge ingrained means that I don't have to worry about trying on so much when I'm making something. So, I mean, hot take, Jen and I both think that a seamed sweater might be a good first sweater to make rather than a seamless. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely do. First of all, because I feel like it's easier to keep up that motivation, right? You're checking things off your list. You're knitting through one piece at a time. But it's also a little bit easier to block it to the measurements in the schematic because you can block each piece separately before you put it together. I know a lot of people are intimidated of seaming, but that's a modern conceit. That's a marketing thing that happened because people wanted to write seamless in the round patterns. Like the default for all of history really has been seamed garments, right? Like that was considered beginner, and knitting in the round was considered an advanced technique.
That's true.
In the way that seaming is now considered like an advanced technique. So my first sweater was definitely seamed. And it was a standard drop shoulder, and it was fine.
My first sweater was also seamed, and it was a cardigan that had like a very, very low, like 3-button cardigan. It was worsted weight, so it was a quick
So knit. Was mine.
Yeah, and it turned out great. I was nervous, but I just trusted the process and went with it. And like you said, when you're knitting flat and seaming, you only have to get gauge one way. When you are knitting a seamless garment, you need to get gauge 3 different ways of knitting, usually, which would be flat, in the round, and in the round small circumference. So that's a much harder thing to do than to just knit flat. You know, if you're a beginner knitter, you've probably knit scarves, you've probably knit pot holders and flat projects like that. So knitting a flat sweater and seaming it together is only marginally harder than knitting a scarf. It's actually pretty similar. And you can check it. You finish one piece, make sure it's the right size. And then you're only like 1/4 or 1/8 of the way through the project. And you don't, you know, if it's not, you haven't wasted as much time.
Yeah. So far we have look at the schematic, Compare it to your own measurements. And if that's overwhelming, compare it to other garments that you have that you love the fit on. Mm-hmm. Make sure you get gauge. And that includes both stitch and row gauge. And if you don't get row gauge, make sure you know what the implications of that will be.
Yeah. Yep. There's very little way around doing some math as a garment knitter, but if you are not designing, if you're making only, then the math is usually pretty simple to make sure that, you know, it's not unusual. If you're using a different yarn than the one that was in the pattern, it is not unusual that you might not be able to achieve perfect gauge. So recognizing that and doing your calculations of, you know, how long will that make each of these little areas, then it's a good thing to know.
Yeah. And I would say that a lot of patterns will tell you that you can totally rely on choosing a size based on looking at your full bust. If you go through the back catalog of this broadcast, you will see that we have strong opinions on that. But I would say if you're a first-time sweater knitter, be sure to check the bicep measurement, right? So that is one place where I see where we have a lot of variability that new knitters get tripped up. So check that bicep and make sure that that upper arm measurement on the garment's schematic is bigger than your arm measurement. And if it's not, make sure that you're changing your shaping rate so that you're doing more increases from whichever direction you're coming, whether it's top up or bottom down, to arrive at a stitch count using your gauge that will give you some room through the upper arm.
Right. And conversely, if the upper arm is significantly bigger than your upper arm, you don't really want, for most garments, more than a couple of inches of ease there at the bicep and underarm. Yeah. So you may need to do less increasing to have a slightly smaller sleeve. I only mention that because I do tend to grade my sleeves for a juicier bicep, and folks who have a less juicy bicep often mention to me that my sleeves are a little loose. I'm like, well,
yeah,
your sleeves are a little tight on me.
I think a great first garment pattern would be a seam tank.
Right. I think a tank or a summer tee are both really great places to start, because they have a tank isn't going to have the sleeve situation, right? But if you do a short sleeve tee, then you get to practice making a sleeve cap, but it'll be fast because it's just the just a shorter sleeve. Long sleeves can take almost as long as the rest of the sweater to make. So that's where the sleeve island vibe comes from. But yeah, I agree. A tank is a great place to start. And it's going to check those boxes of being a little bit more instant gratification, allowing you to translate your skills immediately and see how they play out, and maybe even to make more than one if you want to experiment with, like, something went wrong, let me adjust this and see if that changes it.
We usually agree ahead of time before we mention someone, but I kind of want to shout out that tank that we saw in Chicago.
Oh, I agree. I want to shout it out as well. Although, just side note, I don't think this particular tank is necessarily the best first pattern.
Okay. So,
only because it has bobbles and a fine gauge.
Yeah. But that makes it something that somebody's going to wear, right? Okay. So I feel like if you're moving into garment knitting, then you probably have some skills in your toolkit for knitting, and the garment part is the next part to tackle, right? So Andrea Gowan is a colleague of ours. We've known her for a couple of years. And she, I don't think it's out yet. Is it?
I don't think it's out yet. We saw two of them in Chicago, if I'm remembering correctly. I saw two, and they were both on people who test knit this pattern.
Yeah. So it's a breezy little. Yeah. Yeah. So Andrea's on Instagram, I think at andrea.gowan.knits, but it could be somewhere. The show notes, folks. I'll put it in the show notes when I do them.
And I'm pretty sure that the name of this tank is Galax.
That sounds right.
G-A-L-A-X, but not
positive. It's a breezy summer weight yarn tank top with a lace detail in the front. The construction itself is relatively simple. That detail panel gives you something a little bit pleasurable to knit, and it's just beautiful. She's done a beautiful job with this design. Would knit.
It, Yeah, it fit people really nicely. Would definitely knit my own. And we've seen a lot of really beautiful patterns from Andrea. So check her out if you haven't. She offers a lot of really fit-focused, lovely sweaters and tops. So keep doing what you're doing, Andrea.
Yeah, love to see it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we do think that knitting a seamed garment is a good first garment. And I love to tell people that I learned to knit garments by knitting baby clothes. I didn't know anybody with kids. I didn't plan to have kids anytime soon. I was 14 years away from having a baby, and I was the first person in my friend group to really have babies. So I just had a box of baby knits, but it's a really quick way, and they're cute and they're fun, and you can work mm-hmm. with, like, even if I liked to knit them, honestly, the reason is because I didn't want to work with cheap yarn, and I couldn't afford to knit sweaters for myself in the yarns I wanted to work with. So I was knitting all these cashmere baby sweaters.
Which is really nice.
It's a funny way to get around a budget constraint when you're in college. not a wearable one, but one way. But it gives you an opportunity to crash through a ton of different construction methodologies and to really rack up your skill set in a low stakes way.
And to practice pattern reading, because the patterns for a baby sweater are oftentimes like the same length as a pattern for an adult size sweater. It just isn't as much actual knitting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe not the same length because baby sweaters don't have bust darts and et cetera.
I find it's a little bit shorter. There's also usually fewer sizes. But like I have a couple of patterns where you can knit the kids version, baby version, and then go on and try an adult version. So, I'm not the only one. There are a lot of other patterns that do that too.
Yeah. And baby clothes or children's clothing, you know, they're going to have most of the same fit information in them. So it's a simpler way of reading a pattern, reading a schematic, and starting to understand how those things come together. I personally never had the desire to knit baby clothes. I have knit baby clothes for my nephew when he was a baby. And it is really cute to knit baby sweaters. But that was well after I learned to knit sweaters. Before I started knitting sweaters, I knit a lot of socks. And I think that prepared me very well to go into sweater knitting as well, because socks are usually not knit flat. I have knit flat socks. Traditional Argyle socks are knit flat and seamed, but I will admit that I rarely knit a seamed sock. But for working in the round, which a lot of sweater patterns are seamless, and many of mine are seamless, socks are a great way to practice working in the round. Socks are also great because you don't really have to swatch them, because you can just like knit half the leg and make sure that it's the right size and then continue, right? But I learned a lot about substituting yarns by knitting socks, because they're all almost always fingering weight, right? But then you see how different fingering weight yarns can behave super differently. I learned a lot about color selection and stitch patterns and what I like and what I don't like. And the socks, they just always felt really low stakes to me. And that was how I got over my budget constraint of not being able to afford to knit expensive sweaters, because one skein of sock yarn is not expensive. So one of my first garment projects was cashmere socks.
Well, and this is also another case for flat sweaters. Like if you are a hasty swatcher, and you're somebody who wants to knit that 2-inch swatch and extrapolate, instead of doing that, you can just cast on your sleeve.
Yeah, knit you can half start of your it, sleeve.
Put it on waste yarn and then black that and let it dry. And then if you haven't wasted it, if you are feeling like you're a good predictor of your own gauge, then you'll know. But I do feel like people who gamble with gauge are the people who have probably the most frustrating experience with garment knitting.
Right. And that's why I said it's really becoming a garment maker is undoing a lot of learned cultural behavior, because if you want to enjoy garment making, then you have to learn to enjoy the whole process, which is swatching a lot and practicing the stitch pattern and measuring and checking your math and checking your schematic. you want to do all of those pre-steps before you really jump in, because that's how you'll have the best experience after the fact. Do you have any other, like, before you start your first sweater, here are things that I'd recommend you try?
Like building a skill tree?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so we have like baby sweaters and socks are good projects to try before you try knitting a sweater. But like, what else? What other skills, just besides the knitting technique of like decreasing and managing stitches, et cetera?
You know, I think that sometimes there are patterns that have, like we're both doing this fall, a swatch project, right? Where you can practice all the techniques. So I think if a pattern has one of those, that can be a great way to practice. Making a little pouch with seam size can be a great way to practice your mattress stitch. But no, mostly I think you should just jump in and start doing it. And some of those things are going to fit a little wacky, but you know, I also will say one more thing in my love for seamed sweaters is that if I know I'm not going to get off of it. I'm who I am.
That's okay. Stay with it.
They can be a really great way to try new things because you're usually only doing one thing at once, right? So if you're knitting, let's say a seamed raglan, right? You're not going to be juggling all those decreases and shaping for the arms and the torso at the same time, right? Like you're going to like knit your, you're going to knit your ribbing. Then you're going to do your stitch pattern, right? You're going to do your stitch pattern usually pretty straight to the underarm. You might have some decreases on the sides. And then you'll get to, you'll have all that time to have learned your stitch pattern, practiced it, have it dialed in, and then you'll start decreasing. So then you can start decreasing in pattern without worrying about what's going on with the sleeves, right? You're just doing decreases at either side. And then at the end, you'll do the seaming. And you're not trying to manage that while you're doing everything else. So I feel like it really chunks out and builds the skill set that you need to have success with it as you're doing it. So,
okay, but I would say the same, you could say and map out that same journey with a seamless bottom up set and sleeve.
Yes, you could, because it's picked up and knit around, because you're not messing around with knitting, the sleeve. Yeah. I agree.
You're knitting in the round. Maybe you're doing some decreases or increases for shaping on the sides. Maybe not. Then you cast off for your underarms. And at that point, the front and back are worked as if they're seamed pieces. It's just that you save yourself seaming the sides and you just seam at the shoulder. So, but I do think it's easier to get a good result seaming in a sleeve than picking up from a satin sleeve and knitting when you're new, because picking up with even tension and not having like weird areas around the side can still be challenging for me sometimes at this point. Like that's actually a fairly challenging time to keep gauge. And sometimes picking up when you're not, especially if you have to pick up more stitches than are there. I've had people like test knitting a pattern, be like, you're asking me to pick up X stitches around the sleeve, but there are only X rows. And it's like, right, well, that those numbers are not just one for one. So picking up stitches can be confusing for people. Mattress stitch is actually really easy. I don't sew. I have sewn some things by hand. They're never like good. I can't sew at a fine level of like professionalism. I can sew like something that you don't see, like the pocket I added to Candace's bralette, right? I was proud of that. But if you looked at it, it doesn't look like a professional sewist did it. However, seaming with yarn and a tapestry needle is like pretty straightforward. And I'm not going to say my first seamed sweaters were like perfectly seamed, but I do think they looked better than my first seamless sweaters. So
yeah,
don't be afraid.
Well, I want to keep an eye on the time here and let's do last tips. So my last tip would be, don't think you're more clever than the pattern writer. So I made this mistake a lot when I was new. I was like, why would I bind off these back neck stitches if I'm just going to pick them up later? And I would like not bind them off and I would just put them on hold, thinking I was saving myself from picking up and knitting, which is a skill that's not easy when you're new. Exactly. And then I would get like a back neckline that lost its shape and had a little hole like next to like where you pick it up. So
seemed weird.
If there's if there's things in the pattern that seem unintuitive, do them.
Yeah, follow the pattern.
Follow the pattern.
It's more likely that you'll make a mistake than that the pattern has mistakes. Not that there aren't patterns that have mistakes, but I also often thought I was being clever and would just be like, I'm going to make this section a little different because it seems like it should be. And then those were always wrong choices. It was always like, oh, this weird thing that's happening, that's because I thought for some reason that I needed this to be smaller or bigger.
Yeah.
My big tip is go to a local yarn store, especially find one with a knit night and ask for help. Ask for help measuring. Ask for help reading the pattern. You know, have a community. Join a local knitting guild. You know, if you're serious enough to be making garments, then you're serious enough to be at any of these type of events. And if for no other reason than like those communities are there to help you with things in real time, you know, it's also nice to meet other friends who share your hobby, but selfishly, you'll get a lot of free help by going to things that other knitters are at.
And it'll also be a confidence boost because you'll be able to help the other knitters who are not as far along as you are. And we all know that learning is a mix of teaching and taking in new information. So
yeah,
it's an important part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I've never regretted going to anything where other people are knitting. It's like so nice to knit in person with other people who are also knitting.
I love that tip. That's a really smart tip. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Do we have anything else on choosing your first sweater? I don't think I mentioned, but I would recommend not a very complicated stitch pattern.
Yeah. Just take it back to 2008 and pick something out of Stitch and Bitch, like we all did.
Or Knitty. Those were the places in 2008. Yeah.
You know, and there are brands out there that focus on beginner-friendly patterns. They do a great job of hitting a balance between things that are going to yield a pretty good result for a beginner while not being overly complex, but they might not yield the same fit that you'll come to expect in later years, and that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Start where you are and go slow through the process. Make things, and if you don't like the way they fit you, give them away.
And figure out why.
And do figure a post-mortem. Out why.
And just know that that's part of the process. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're really not sure, send us pics, send us your measurements, let us know. We're here to help. We're here to help that kind of thing. If you do have a fit question though, right, the way to get our help is to send us a picture of you wearing the thing. Ideally also a picture of the thing not on a body and your gauge information and your measurements. And the size you made. Yeah. We'll take a look at anything, you know, whether it's our pattern or not. We're really interested in fit and we're really interested in helping you with fit. And it is our coffee supporters and other members, like Jen said, who give us the honor of being able to answer questions for people, whether you're making our pattern or not. You know, we're here to be resources because we have community support too. So thank you.
Thanks for participating in this with us. It really means a lot.
Yeah. None of us are in this alone, whether you're at me and Jen's place in the world of knitting or you're just making your very first sweater. We all need our community. No, see, I can make Jen cry on the internet.
But you can.
And to follow up, since you guys all loved our first time meeting story, Jen did get emotional one time, which is that we were on the airport shuttle and we were going to different terminals and different parts of the country. And Jen just turns to me as she's about to get off the bus and goes, I just realized I'm not going to see you for a really long time.
Do this to
me.
I'm not crying on the internet for likes, Bess. I'm not doing it.
My evil marketing scheme is here.
This is all you wanted. You've done it.
I know. I miss you too, friend. It's been almost a month since we were in person and it does already feel like too long. So we're figuring out when the next time we're going to be together is. And I think it's going to be at Rhinebeck, huh?
It might be in New York.
It looks like we might be at Rhinebeck. So,
pressure us or don't. Talk us out of it. We're on the fence.
Right? Talk us into it or out of it. And if you don't want to see us there, where would you want to see us? If you could run into me and Jen anywhere and hang out with us for a day, where would that be?
Yeah. Happy birthday, bestie.
Happy birthday to you. I'm so glad that we're besties. And
thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. Happy knitting.